Morning, everybody. How are you today? Man, that was awful. Come on, if you went to the picnic, you had fun yesterday. It's beautiful. How are you doing today? I get it. It's hot in here. It's sucking the energy out of us, okay? But it's good to see you. We're glad you're here. If you're a guest, we're especially glad you're hanging out with us. We're doing a series right now called Family Vacation, where we're, it's almost vacation season. And so we're kind of thinking about destinations family might go on and tying those to big issues that we as individuals and inside our families, we struggle with. And this morning, we're going to talk about technology. It's a big issue, a big struggle, and we believe the gospel has something to say. Now, with that in mind, grab your phone, take it out. Okay, you got your phone? Because we are also using technology as a church. Now, if you have a carrier that doesn't allow you to have service inside this, I'm sorry, we switched to find one that did. So I apologize if, you know, you have somebody who doesn't. So if you can't do what I'm about to tell you to do, do it later. But here's what I want you to do is I want you, if you don't have the Genesis app, get it. Android, iTunes Store, we have, an app that is Genesis Church, has all kinds of great content. If you have it, go ahead and find your app. If you don't, go to find your browser and go to GenesisEureka.com right now. Got it? If you get in the app, go find the place where it says info and then find the website through there. So either way, what we want you to do is end up on the Genesis website. All right, once you're there, you will scroll down and you will see a place where it says recent blog posts or recent blogs. And you will see there where it says vote for Genesis top 10. All right, do you see that? Vote for your top 10 picks now. Okay? Click on that. So here's what's going on. Our next series we're doing for the summer is called Top 10. For the last several weeks, we've had people submit nominations for sermon titles and topics. You get to choose what I'm going to preach on, and some other guys will help us as we do the series. And the way you choose is by voting. So, if you do it right now during the service, nobody's going to get after you. But listen with one ear while you're thinking about this for a minute or two, okay? Otherwise, go home, share it. We've had this shared out through Twitter, through Facebook, on our website, all this sort of way. But the only way to vote, we are dragging you into the 21st century, some of y'all old hats here, okay? The only way to vote is on this blog post. It's going to be open for about another week, so take time to vote. Get your votes in on the sermons you'd like us to preach. We're going to take the top 10 vote getters, and we will have a sermon this summer on those topics, the questions that are raised by those topics. So we're excited about that. Man, technology has changed. I literally remember the 1984 Super Bowl. Now, the truth is, I don't remember who played. We could Google that, and I could get the answer really quick. But I do remember a commercial, and I remember seeing it when it happened and thought, this is really weird, as Apple promoted the first series of the Macintosh computer, and the whole commercial was kind of this revolution, and everything changed as they, the lady threw the giant hammer, and it blew up the screen, and, but I remember that. And they were announcing a revolution that really has taken place. So I'm going to show you some pictures, and here's what I want. If you were here and you remember, not as a novelty in some weird store, some weird antique store playing with it, but if you actually remember using one of these, I want you to stand, okay? So here we go. Here's first one. If you actually use that for real, stand up. All right. For those of you who are younger, that would be an 8-track player, okay? They were awful because it just kept running. You couldn't go find your favorite song. You had to listen to everything else and let it come back. All right, you can have a seat. Let's look at the next one. If you remember, if you had a bag phone, used one, if you used or had or used a bag phone. I remember I had one of these, and there were like two cell towers in all of Missouri on I-70. I remember breaking down in my car on I-70 and standing on the hood of my car with my bag phone. It had a long power cord, so you had to keep it plugged in to the cigarette lighter, standing on the hood of my car, holding my phone up like this, trying to get a signal to call somebody because my phone was broken down. True story. All right, go ahead. Here's the next one. If you remember this, that would be a credit card machine where you put your card in and they ran it through like this. Remember that? Half of you are like, no, I've never seen that before in my life. All right, here's the next one. Did you use this? The floppy disk. How many of you remember using a floppy disk? How many of you, when they came out with the CD-ROM, thought it was a cup holder? All right, next one. The TV with the turn knob where you would have your kid. I was the kid. I would have to go hold the antenna, hold my leg out, and stick my tongue out a certain way so we could actually watch Channel 30 at my house. Remember that? True story. This is what we like. Some of you in this room are like, what? Really? All right. Is that it? Do we have another one? I think that's it. Oh, no. Here you go. How many of you remember that? Like, if you know what typewriter ribbon is. And then they updated, we may have another typewriter picture. Then all of a sudden, the electronic typewriter. We thought that was a gift from God, right? You remember that? Is that it? I think that's, is that the last one we have? That is the last one we have. See, look around. Those of you who are young, you have no idea how easy you have it in this world. Technology. Now, the truth of the matter is we're standing up here talking about technology. We could come across by going, you know, technology's bad and evil, and that's not where we're going, okay? Just so you know, we're not going to sit here and label technology. Technology has created so many advances in so many really positive ways. Better medicine and medical technology. It has enhanced education. The world of economics has changed. I mean, there are so many positives, even down to the ability to have a phone and use it and all that sort of stuff. But we need to be aware that there is a great danger for us. And part of this morning, what I want to do is encourage you to acknowledge for us, like adults in this room, there's a danger, and there's a great danger for our children. Grab your Bible real quick. I'm going to look at a passage of Scripture from the book of Isaiah, chapter 46. If you have a Bible, grab that. Don't have a Bible, we have a Bible at the end of your rows. As you're looking that up on page 676. I don't know if you remember 2002, the movie Minority Report came out. Tom Cruise. And if you've never seen it, it's back then was a futuristic movie. But the scene I remember is that he would walk into a store, and as he walked into a store, they had this retinal scanner that would scan you anywhere you were. And when it scanned your retina, it now, like, you would walk into the gap, and it would say, you know, hello, Mr. Hubbard, like if it was me, we're glad you're here. We remember last time you were in the store, you bought this, this, and this. Can we help you find those today? Like, it knew every individual that went everywhere. You were driving down the highway, it could read you. It always knew where you were, and the whole idea of the story was this future world where you could not escape your identity and being known at every point in time. Now, unlike Back to the Future, where the Cubs, you know, did win the World Series, I guess, but not in the right year, but there's all these other things. You kind of look at like the Back to the Future world, not quite. It's kind of crazy how the Minority World story is really coming true, to the point where my wife was telling me a story about looking for something on Pinterest and then going to a website, and the website pulled up an ad for the thing she was looking at on Pinterest. It there are things that are going on, and one of the big things, like, we're going to have some people come up and help us a little bit later. Brandon Allen is our man, he's brilliant in this area, he's so helpful. One of the things he keeps telling me is, he says, you think you are the consumer and you are looking at products. You need to realize in a larger way, you and your children are the product for another consumer. In fact, he's told me, if you ever download a free app, you need to know you did not choose a product, you are now the product. Okay, now that doesn't mean, I'm not saying don't get free apps. There's discussion about that, but you need to know, if you click and go, hey, here's a free one, here's what I pay for, the reason it's free is because they have made you the product. They're gathering information on you, right? And so we need to be aware of that. And in the midst of that, in Isaiah chapter 46, there's this real clear teaching at a point in time for the people of Israel. I'm going to read the entire chapter real quick, and then I'm going to make a couple big applications or kind of show you the big idea of the text and then try to apply that to us. And then we're going to do something a little bit different this morning at the end. Bel bows down, Nebo stoops. Their idols are on beasts and livestock. These things you carry are born as burdens on weary beasts. They stoop, they bow down together. They cannot save the burden, but themselves go into captivity. Listen to me, O house of Jacob, all the remnant of the house of Israel who have been born by me from before your birth, carried from the womb. Even to your old age, I am he. And to gray hairs, I will carry you. I have made and I will bear, and I will carry you and save. To whom will you liken and make me equal and compare me that we may be alike? Those who lavish gold and from the purse and weigh out silver in the scales hire a goldsmith and he makes it into a god. Then they fall down and worship. They lift it to their shoulders. They carry it. They set it in its place and it stands there. It cannot move from its place. If one cries to it, it does not answer or save him from his trouble. Remember this and stand firm. Recall it to mind, you transgressors. Remember the former things of old, for I am God, there is no other. I am God, there is none like me. Declaring the end from the beginning, from the ancient times things that have not yet been done, saying, my counsel shall stand and I will accomplish my purpose. And calling a bird of prey from the east, the man of my counsel from the far country. I have spoken, and I will bring it to pass. I have purpose, and I will do it. Listen to me, you stubborn of heart, you who are far from righteousness. I bring near my righteousness. It is not far off, and my salvation will not delay. I will put salvation in Zion for Israel, my glory. All right, so what's going on in this text, and how does it have anything to say to my technology? Well, there are two big ideas in this text that are running side by side. Here's idea number one. The people in this text are living at a time where they literally have been ripped from their homeland, and they're living as exiles in a foreign country. The Hebrew people, the Jewish people, the Old Testament, God warned them over and over again about their idolatry, about putting anything in the place of God, about worshiping anything that is created rather than honoring the Creator for making it, and by exalting things in their heart is more important than knowing the one true God. They did it over and over and over again, and God kept saying, if you do this, I'm eventually going to act in a way of discipline towards you. And what happened is that eventually the Babylonian Empire took the people of God from Israel. They now live in a foreign country. They're living as exiles. They're functioning as indentured servants to a foreign kingdom. And the question is, how do the people of God live in a culture that is not their own? But their problem all through the Old Testament is this idea of idolatry. We're going to hit that in just a minute because that's the core. And so now they're in this foreign country, and the first verse mentions this. It says, Bel bows down, Nebo stoops. So in other words, what you have here is the prophet Isaiah naming by name the two most important idolatrous gods of the Babylonian people, Bel and Nebo. Now, I did a word study on this. I went and looked in my lexicons and looked up the original language. And this is what I found, that in the original Hebrew, Bel and Nebo actually are accurately translated Apple and Android. Not really. I made that up. Just so you know. So you're like, really? Oh, my gosh. No. But the point here, this is the point I want you to get, is that that culture had their gods, and here's what God is saying to that culture. He's saying, listen, idolatry doesn't work because those gods cannot do for you what you want. They cannot save you. They cannot speak to you. They cannot answer you. In fact, I want you to look real quick down at verse 7 at the question that is raised. He says, they lift their shoulders, they carry it, they set it in its place, and it stands there. And it cannot move from its place. Now, this is what he's saying. He's kind of previously said, here's what happens. They bring this guy gold, and literally what was made into your god had to be carried on the back of an animal. And they brought these raw materials, and they handed it to a craftsman who used gold and wood, and he started crafting it, and all of a sudden, somebody made your god. And then you went and picked it up, and this phrase of with your shoulders picked up. It's the idea of picking up in my hands and carrying. So it fits in your hand. And then look at what he says. He says that it sets in its place and it stands there. It cannot move from its place. What's that place? It's the fireplace mantle where they have created a shrine. They put something in its place and it now is there. And now what they do is they step back and they bow down to it. They worship it. They call out to it by name. They say, this is my God. This can save me. My hope, my dreams, everything about me is wrapped up in this being my all in all. And Isaiah, speaking on the behalf of God under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, says, that God cannot save you. And I love the language he says here. He says, if one cries out to it, does it not answer or save him from his trouble? Now, I know some of you are going, wait a minute, we have Siri now. It does answer. But the issue here is he's saying, listen, when you take something and you make it God, you put it in this place of primacy and your hopes and dreams and your values and attitudes, everything is wrapped up. When you give it all your attention, all your energy, all your hope, it can't save because it can't get up and move. But the problem is that idols are tangible. And the one true and living God is calling us to know him. He is not. He does not fit in space and time, and he is a spiritual being who is known through relationship, but you can't fit him in your hand. You cannot put him on your mantle. You cannot have a shrine and say, I've got my God boxed, and I will run to this box, and I will fall down and worship it. God says, you will never know me that way. And it's so much easier for us as human beings to find a way to give ourselves to something we can put in our hands. That's the text, okay? Like, how does the Bible speak to us about our technology? It really does. Because our hearts are idol factories. We have a tendency all the time to put something in the place of God. Tim Keller has said this, book Counterfeit Gods. He said, what's an idol? It is anything more important to you than God. Anything that absorbs your heart and imagination more than God. Anything you see to give what only God can give. A counterfeit God is anything so central and essential to your life that should you lose it, your life would feel hardly worth living. Now, let's be honest. We live in a culture where our iPhones and our iPads or our Android tablets and our video games and our 70-inch TV screen and our apps like Netflix have taken that place in our lives and the culture. And the big question is that we need to understand as we wrestle with the idea of idolatry is, are we using our technology to do in us and for us what we want to see happen in our lives, or have we gotten to the point where our technology uses us? Because if the answer really is number two, we got an idol problem. Which leads to point number two in the text. The way to deal with an idol problem is not to go, I got an idol problem, I got to get over it. The way to deal with an idol problem is to see God. To realize that you have replaced the one who is glorious. And so the rest of this text, God says, what do you have that you can compare to me? I created everything, and I am able, I am here for you. I have rescued you. I have redeemed you. I have acted. Listen, no God can pull off the type of prophetic word that I have where I tell you way in advance what's going to happen. This is happening. Like all of Isaiah 40 through 61 is actually prophetic in nature. Isaiah is speaking in a prophetic way to people who are going to live 200 years after him. It's a crazy section of the Bible where God inspires an author of scripture to keep saying, when you live in Babylon, this is the way you live, but Isaiah will be dead for 150 years before Babylon happens. And so over and over in the text, God keeps saying through Isaiah's pen, who else could have done this? Who else could have written about? In Isaiah 45, he calls a world leader by name 200 years before he's born. And it's God in the Bible going, hey man, your iPhone may be able to answer how you get from point A to point B, but your iPhone cannot tell you what's going to happen 200 years from now, and it cannot create purpose and meaning for your life. And God says, listen, I accomplished my purpose, and oh, by the way, even when you sin, even when you mess up, guess what I do, is what God says. It's the last couple of verses. He says, when you are unrighteous, in my righteousness, I move towards you, and I still love you. This is the story of the gospel. That's why everything here is about the gospel. The way you overcome idolatry is not by trying to unlove your idolatry. The way you overcome idolatry is by looking to Christ and falling in love with him. And he will replace the idolatry. But we need to wrestle with it this morning, right? You get what I'm saying? And so I read a book this week. I want to commend it to you. I have three copies here today that are for sale, $11. And if you are not out to our book table fast enough, you can go to Amazon, which is technology. Whoops. TechWise Family by Andy Crouch. I read most. I'll own what I read about 80% of this book this week and skim read what I didn't just to get the big ideas. Everyday Steps for Putting Technology in Its Proper Place. It's good. It is worth the read. Moms and dads, it is worth looking through. He is calling us to say, to be reminded of this. See, here's what happens. We look at this and our kids go, but mom and dad, if I don't get my phone when I'm 8, or when I'm 9 or when I'm 11, I'm weird. If I can't have full access to Snapchat or Instagram when I'm 13, we're weird. Here's a question I want to ask us as people. When did God call us to anything that didn't say we're going to be weird in this culture? We need to be okay saying we serve a different God. It's going to make us different. And if we're not okay to say that about ourselves and about our kids, and if we're not willing to love Christ with all that we are, which means that I'm going to take the technology that I have and do all I can not to let it be an idol for me and my children, but to put it in its proper place, we are going to look different in a world where everybody is tied with their soul to their phone. Just watch somebody lose their iPhone, watch somebody lose their Android, and see what happens to their life. And so, real practical advice in a book. I'm not going to preach the book, but I will commend it to you. He is calling for a new Amish way for us. And what he means by Amish is not that we don't have technology. Is that we live counterculturally so that the technology doesn't own us. Good book, worth a read. Doesn't mean I agree with every idea. You will read some stuff and go, oh my gosh, if I did this to my family, it would be like way overboard. But there are some really good things, i.e. when it's time for dinner, the tablets and the phones go somewhere else, and I've had to wrestle with that this week. I'm awful at that. We look at our kids all the time and go, no toys at the table. I bring my toy to the table all the time, right? But relationships though. So what happens then is that when this stuff starts to become our God, we start wrestling with things, and Andy Crouch in this book says a lot of stuff. I'm going to read three quotes that I just were helpful even this week for me. Here's the first one. The better way involves radically recommitting ourselves to what family is about and what real life is about. Our homes aren't meant to be just refueling stations, places where we and our devices rest briefly, top out our charge, and then go back to a frantic activity. They are meant to be places where the very best of life happens. That's why God gave you your family. Your family is not a recharging place. It is the place where the best of life should be happening for you and your children. And so I love that. Next quote. We are continually being nudged by our devices toward a set of choices. And by the way, if you don't believe that, you don't understand what's going on, because the whole basis of apps is based on this. They're trying to nudge you to make certain choices. And if you don't believe it, just watch what happens with your feed of ads that just pop up. They're watching you and they know. The question is whether those choices are leading us to life we actually want. I want a life of conversation and friendship, not distraction and entertainment. But every day, many times a day, I'm nudged in the wrong direction. One key part of the art of living faithfully with technology is setting up better nudges for ourselves. It's a good quote. Third quote. We will have to teach our children from early on that we are not here as parents to make their lives easier, but to make them better. We will tell them and show them that nothing matters more to our family than creating a home where all of us can be known, loved, and called to grow. And then we'll have to make the hard choices sometimes, radical choices, to use technology in a very different way from the people around us. Now, that's just three quotes. There's a lot of gold, and so I commend the book to you as a way to take the sermon and apply it more deeply. But what I want to do real quick is I want to talk to you about three choices that we need to be making that will help us avoid this as idolatry and to start moving in the right direction. And all three of these areas, there are levels of adjustment. I'm not in here confessing to you that I have this figured out. We have failures in our home. We have failures in our life in all three of these areas, now and in the past. But we want to grow. I want to wrestle with this. And I want this to be collectively with us a place to say our technology is a good thing, but when it becomes a God thing in our life, it becomes a very bad thing, right? Okay, let me say that again. I'm going to hear some amens, because either you're really ticked off at me or technology is a good thing. But when technology becomes a God thing, it's going to become a very bad thing for us, okay? And so just some choices, directions, and the first one is this, and I'm going to hit these really fast because we're going to do something fun here in just a minute. The first thing is that we need to choose to protect our character and the character of our children, and this is massive. A recent study tells us that 15% of teens sent and 27% of teens have received a sext, which means 15% of our kids have sent out a picture of their naked self, and almost one in three have gotten that picture. Studies tell us that college freshmen who were surveyed, 93% of men, young men, and 65% of young women say that they have viewed porn before their 18th birthday on their device. And I'm not going to go down the direction of that, but you need to realize that we need to protect our eyes. One of the things that our technology is doing is going after our character. 40% of all internet traffic is pornography. It is not the only issue out there either, okay? You get this, right? But it's there. There are men in our church who could testify of how having unfettered access to devices too early and parents who were uninvolved left a temptation out there for them that has destroyed them in many ways, and they still deal with the residue of an addiction they have a hard time overcoming. You need to realize that our brains are wired in certain ways so that every time, like you have your phone and it is set up so that you get all these alerts, which I do too. Every time the alert thing goes off, your body emits a dose of dopamine, which is it's a drug that your own body creates, but it creates an addiction so that the more it dings, the more I'm drawn to it, the more I feel like something awesome is happening, and my joy very quickly, based on my physiological response, is what's happening on my device, on my phone. There are so many things here, and we need to protect, first of all, the eyes that we see. So let me just lovingly say, man, I get really kind of weirded out when I see like third and fourth graders with unfettered access to a cell phone. Now you say, well, that should be an open-handed issue. It is. If that's what you've chosen, but I'm just telling you that the research out there is crazy about screen time and what it's doing to our kids. My wife said you need to bring a teacher on stage so some teachers can have some honest conversations with our parents about what's going on in the classroom and the fact that kids no longer have an attention span. And it has been created because we babysat our kids with a screen. Because, kids are fighting, twins are going crazy. Here, let me put this in your hand, let me put this in your hand. My life is okay. I could go sit, Calgon, take me away, right? Man, I dated myself there, that was awful. but all of a sudden, there's this thing. We need to be very careful about this in our families. And I will tell you just two things. Too young's a danger. Too much, which I'm going to hit in just a minute, is a danger. But mom and dad, you should never, until your kids leave your house, give up the right to know the passwords, the location, and all the information on your phone. It is okay to look at your kids and lovingly say, as long as I pay for the phone, you do not have the right to tell me. I can't look at it anytime I want. And you need to know this. You cannot expect what you do not inspect. All right? Now, teenagers in here freaking out, I just said what I said because I love you. I know it's a hard word this morning about that, but I love you and I want the best for you, and I do know where this goes. I do know the men I've sat in my office with who are in their 20s, who there are major life issues because this wasn't done, okay? And we also need to have great conversations with our kids about what comes out of their social media and to make sure that the character of Christ is showing up in what they tweet and post and all that kind of stuff. And so guarding our eyes, guarding our mouth is just part of this, and parents, invest your lives in that. Second thing, real quick, is this, that we need to avoid it consuming our lives. I've already hit this, and so I'm not going to go into detail, but if we're not modeling this, first of all, if we're binge-watching Netflix all the time, we cannot expect our kids to grow up as people who do not binge-watch Netflix. If our phone and our tablets are on the table at meals, and so my encouragement, the big encouragement that this comes from the book, but it's other things, is that we need to create spaces and times where technology is off-limits. In the books, he says we ought to have an hour a day a week, and a week a year where we shut it all off and walk away. Now I'm not there, okay, just so you know. But maybe we should wake up before our devices do, and they should go to sleep before we do. Maybe it would be a good idea for, especially for our kids, but maybe for us to have charging stations that are outside our room. I mean, these are just some thoughts, but what I'm saying is the dinner table, family time, let's create space where we are doing relationship together and not letting our phone consume us. Let's model this, let's teach us, let's give our kids limits on how much time they spend on stuff and how much they do. Let's be careful about giving them full access to stuff and just letting it be nonstop. Space. And so it will become an idol really quick if it consumes our lives. And the third pathway I just want to talk about is giving primacy to relationships. What's happening is that our world has replaced this with being a friend or being liked here. And so what takes place is that in our own lives and lives of our kids, if we have 1,000 friends on Facebook, but none who will actually go have a cup of coffee with us, we might have a problem. I heard this part of the story this week, a girl that we knew and loved who took her own life. And the day or two preceding her death, put out a ton of stuff on social media that said, I need somebody to talk to. She didn't have somebody she could call and say, I need to have a cup of coffee. Will you go? She put it out on social media and nobody replied. Oh, we need the church. We need our community of faith. We need the family to be a place where relationships are real. And it's an idol in our lives if we've replaced life on life, skin on skin, the hard stuff of messy relationships with our social media. And we need to repent. We need to help our kids figure that out. Now, that's my points, okay? But it would be silly for me to be the guy who stands up here and tells you all that. So what we're doing this morning is we're going to do something really different. We got a panel discussion. We're going to bring four people up on stage who have a little different role in this. And so y'all come on up. If those of you who are part of this, start heading this way. Okay, no, it's not, this is not volunteer. We're not asking for volunteers. This is not The Price is Right, okay? We pull a name out of hat. Come on down. We got four people who have agreed to come up here, and they're going to pull up on these stools up here, and they're going to help us have a conversation for the next few minutes about this. So my sermon part's over. That's a record, I think, 33 minutes. But we are going to hear from these folks. We got two microphones up here. Is this one on? Test. Check this. There it is. That one's on. All right. Bring it over. Come have a seat. And real quick, Benny, you got a microphone in there. So just introduce yourself to us.
Hi, I'm Benny.
I asked Benny to be up here for two reasons. First of all, to have a whole bunch of old fogies and not a teenage voice just means we don't get it, right? Vinny's a teenager, but Vinny is super active on social media, and she has, in her own life, testified about how she is using social media as a platform to share the gospel with her friends, and she does it, and it's awesome. All right, Brandon.
I'm Brandon.
All right, I'll stop doing that.
This one? Okay. I'm Eric.
I'm Amy.
All right, so Brandon is our resident expert. We talked about Koinonia earlier. Brandon built Koinonia. And he is super well-read, super well-informed. He keeps me up to date on stuff and sometimes yells at me because I don't do certain things that I shouldn't be doing to protect my privacy and take care of my kids. He's the one who kind of is the check and balances on that. Eric built our app, and Eric is also super involved in the technology world, works in that world. And then Amy is a parent of teenagers. And just through some conversations, she's doing some cool things, just loving her kids well. And so we thought we'd throw out some questions, all right? So here's the first question I have for our panel. What do you think are the most important issues or most dangerous pitfalls in the moment as it relates to technology for ourselves and for our families? All right, somebody's actually got to take the microphone and answer. We sent these in advance, but I should have been thinking about these.
Can you say that question again?
All right, I'll read it again. What do you think are the most important issues or most dangerous pitfalls in this moment as we think about technology, social media, all that stuff?
I think you gave a lot of that in when you were talking earlier about parents being responsible. They give a lot of... We're giving our kids this great technology and information, But with that comes great parent responsibility to monitor them at all times. Some kids like that, some kids don't. My kids have a hard time with it sometimes, but they know that at any point in time, any day, I can take their phone, I can unlock it. Password changes, it changes because of mama, not because of what they wanted. And I can look through their history. I know how to do that. I know how to turn it on. I know how to turn it off. I know how to look at back things. I do not like Snapchat.
Probably the addictive nature. Mm-hmm. I mean, you hit on the dopamine. I mean, that it's just the well you keep going back to. And the addictive nature of social media and the satisfaction or approval that I get from that. You know, it's really dangerous.
All right.
That's what I would say.
Any thoughts on that? Vinny, you got anything for us?
Sure. I think the biggest downfall is, like, the validation we seek from social media. Instead of, like, asking, like, I don't know, instead of, like, going to your parents for approval, we just, like, post it and be, like, ask what other people think. So I think that's the biggest downfall is just seeking the validation.
That's a good answer. All right. I got to throw this out and hit a lot of points on this, but pornography and other dangerous things lie out there on the Internet. What's a few things that parents can do to protect themselves and their kids?
Well, for me and Sofana, I hated this at first, but, like, it helped because we weren't able to, like, access any of those, is that our parents, like, put a password on our Internet, and it was really annoying because, like, we could not access anything, and we would have to, like, ask for a password to be put in if we're trying to, like, access a certain website for school and stuff, so that prevented a lot of issues.
So is it okay for like the ability to download apps to be in the hands of the parents instead of in the kids?
It's really annoying, but because you're trying to download an app and you're in middle of school and you have like text them like, hey, could you approve this app real quick? So that's really obnoxious, but I guess it does its job.
All right, cool. Anybody else? What are some things we can do or ways we can manage this, both for ourselves? Like, does that just make this about our kids? It's about ourselves too.
I need that one.
Yeah. I mean, there's tons of specific apps out there, like Covenant Eyes, you know, is very important to be knowledgeable about. But just being involved and being aware, like Vinny's talking about, you as a parent are the shepherd. You are the shepherd at the gate, and you are in charge of what gets through. I mean, and there's a variety of tools, you know, practical tools of doing that. Covenant Eyes is one. There's X3 Watch. There's a ton of other things specifically related to internet content. But, you know, Brandon will know a lot of that.
Yeah. Go ahead, Brandon.
So I just want to echo what Vinny said. I think setting parental controls is one of the biggest things. Apple makes it really easy. I'm not sure about Android, but Apple makes it easy through a thing called family sharing, to where you have to request to download an app. But it's a way to know, you know, they can't sneak Snapchat on there or whatever. And Snapchat is hard because if you don't know, once someone sends a snap, it disappears after a certain amount of time, depending on how it's posted. But the time varies. But it disappears, so it makes it hard to track and see what's happening and that kind of thing. So there are tons and tons of different things that will allow you to filter the internet. Most of it can be done through an individual device without having to do anything extra. But it can get complicated. And to echo what Eric said is that it's, as a parent, it's your responsibility. You don't, this day and age, you don't have the option to just kind of say, I don't get technology, and just kind of throw your hands up. It's, the onus is on you, and you've got to step up and learn it. It's not easy. You're not going to keep up. Don't expect to keep up. But I think if you follow what Amy was saying and just stay on top of it, I think the threat of getting your device searched does a lot.
So let me speak to that, and I'm going to come back to something you just said, and I want you to answer. I'm going to go off script just a little bit because something we talked about the other day. I'm going to lovingly look at the men in this congregation who are here and say, what we just said about your teenagers, you need to do for yourselves. In other words,
I want to encourage you, if you are married, to give your wife absolute access to your phone, your computer, any device you have, that she knows all the passwords, and that she is able to access at any point in time. I don't know when Heidi does this, but she knows she has absolute access to grab my computer, my phone, anything. She has all the passwords, and at any point in time, she may check, which means that if I fail in this area, I could be caught, and I don't want to crush the heart of my wife, which is the, like, I love her more than any picture out there, and so I don't want to do that to her. So what we're saying about our kids, I just want to say it should go sideways, too, between married couples. Okay. Now, you brought up an issue about being informed. What's something one or two? This is where I'm going off script and asking you. What give an idea or two, or just something about how can parents stay informed?
Read. There's tons of articles that come out on a regular basis. Some of it is specific to saying, "Hey, parents, here's something you can do." The Apple App Store, just last week, I think, posted a whole little article that says something about parents and Snapchat, helping parents understand Snapchat or something like that, which again goes back to the burden is on you. You have to read. There's no other way. Some of it's going to go over your head, but you've got to try, because otherwise, bad things will happen.
So one of the things that we're going to do is we're going to, Brandon's going to help us with this. We're going to start on the Genesis blog. He's going to start doing blog posts that are about family and technology. And just create some easy, he can't do it all for you, but we are going to try to create some thoughts out there that are coming through Genesis content for that. Did you have something to add to that, Eric? All right. Next question. What are some things you and your family do, or you've heard others do, that are practical ways to create spaces and times for, like, Sabbath from technology? In other words, does your family have a time and a place where you say, it's time to put it down? Do you set limits? What those limits look like? Or what ideas do you have with that?
We're not always great at this because we have one that loves to watch videos all the time. And but when we're at the dinner table, it has to go away. When we're all sitting around the dinner table, that phone has to, earbuds wrapped around, it has to be away. Sometimes we're not, you know, the most, we'll all of a sudden be sitting around and there it is. And we're like, oh, come on, you know. Community group now, cell phone has to stay in the car, can't even go in the house to a community group, so there's some interaction there. It's just at nighttime, sometimes they don't go to bed with them. Most of the time. Sometimes they do. So not perfect, but we try.
Anybody else?
My kids are all 10 and under, and there's four of them. So if they were at the dinner table and there was a device on the table, that thing would get trashed. But so it's not necessarily as intentional as I would like it to be, but yeah, mealtimes we don't have any devices at the table. Community group, like you're saying, we're not as good at policing that necessarily, but when our kids all go downstairs with LP or whoever is watching them, or Abby, then we're trying to make that a point of no devices going downstairs, because it'll just devolve into, I don't know, chaos. Yeah. I mean, it'll be quieter at least. But.
Mm-hmm. All right. Any other thoughts, anybody? All right. What are one or two things you should teach your kids about the nature of social media? I'd really love to hear from you, but I want you to answer this too, Ben. But what should parents be teaching their kids about the nature of social media? So somebody else chime in, but then we'll get that, I think, your perspective.
My mom has always told me that, like, whatever you post out there doesn't really go away. So that kind of just sucks with you. You're just like, ooh, maybe I shouldn't post that because that's just going to be up there for a while. So I don't know, that kind of scares me, so I don't really want to post anything that I wouldn't want to be up there for a really long time.
Cool. All right. That's good.
Actually, she'll mention like some adults that we look up to, and she was like, hey, would you want Jody Burnley to see this? Or something like that. Some like adults we look up to. So we're like, oh, yeah, we wouldn't want that, so we don't post it.
That's cool. All right.
Anybody else? What's one or two things we should teach our kids about the nature of social media?
I think Vinny just said the biggest thing in the whole thing is whatever you post is always out there. And no matter you think it might be hidden or you're 14 and you're not thinking what's going to happen when you're 31, when your employers go to look up your name and all your history comes up, because it does, and that's what they look at.
Yeah. I don't know how you term this, but what you're seeing on Facebook is not reality. That is the absolute best reality of whoever you're looking at. They don't put up, I mean, people don't put up really what their life is like. I mean, not everybody does anyway.
To kind of echo and build on what he said, at the same time, especially with celebrities, the majority of that is all paid. Not only is it not real, it's a very edited version of their life. Most of it is paid sponsorships. YouTube, all the videos that kids are watching on YouTube about slime and all that, they are all making stuff. Tegan and I were at Target, and there's some channel that she likes to watch, and the girl had some clothing line there. And I looked at her and I said, this is the exact thing that I've been telling you. Like, it's all fake. They're all trying to make money. And along with the whole internet is forever thing, also kind of help guide them on not only the whether or not someone will themselves or someone will think poorly on what they've posted, but also what, how do I word this? You want to be careful with giving personal information. Location, like whether or not you're on a vacation, names, all that kind of stuff. You want to teach them to guard that really closely. It may seem innocuous to just throw something little out there, but when you have years of just data streams, you can combine that, and people can track you down.
Got one more question I'm going to ask you, okay? And it's this. What can parents do to model healthy behavior with our technology? In other words, what are some things that, instead it's always, hey, we need to do this with the kids or for kids. What are some things, some steps maybe we can take that begins to shape this conversation in a way where our kids are not seeing a disconnect between what we do and what we say we want our kids to do?
Put your phone down.
Put your phone away, put your tablet away, dinner time. There's appropriate places and time where you can sit back, chill out, and, you know, play your video game or something, but always make sure you're having that interaction with people, not just your device.
Probably what you're doing with your device, you know, like using it for Audible books, using it for, you know, Bible study and stuff like that. It's meant to do those things, and it, you know, well.
So there is a difference between useless use of time, I'll use that, and maybe that's too strong a word, and purposed use of time.
Yeah.
And figuring out how we do it together, and I'm doing it by myself, and those sort of things, which are kind of categories that are addressed in the book, and that sort of stuff. So. Man, we appreciate it. Any of you have anything that you'd like to share that we haven't talked about?
I think school has really encouraged our kids to use their devices more and more because I know one of them has like a homework calendar on his phone, and they look up stuff. So when you're trying to punish your children, because that's what we do as parents when they are didn't you know do what they needed to be done, that device comes away, or if that's becoming an idol for them, to take that away. But it's really hard because the school systems have really encouraged them to have their phone at all times so they can look up stuff, document, look up. So it's a struggle for parents, I think, with the school. So I'm not afraid not to send my kids to school with their devices. It's hard on me, though, too, because I want to know where they are at all times.
Any other comments? Anybody else? Hey, we thank these folks for being up here.
Our band's going to have you play Let Us Sing to Jesus. I hope this was helpful. And like I said, it is our commitment to try to create more resources out there. But the book's a good place to start. And just an encouragement as we kind of close back to the text. Man, this is a struggle for all of us. The solution in the end is to set good rails, to set good limits, to create guards around ourselves and our kids. But the way to overcome idolatry in our lives is to find a love and an affection for something that is better. And that is Jesus. And so we run to him. And so as we sing in the next few minutes, as we celebrate Jesus, as we hear from some good friends who are here to share something, let the affections of your heart for Christ to grow. And if you're here this morning and you're like, oh man, this is my first time here, you've been with us for a while, and you're like, I don't understand the whole Jesus thing, or if you feel like the Lord's talking to you, and you want to learn more about what it means to follow Jesus, to trust Jesus, at the end of service, we'll be down here to talk with you, and we'd love to share who Jesus is, explain him to you, and to show you how he is better than anything else that you could have in your life, and you can trust him today. And so we'll have people down here at the end of our service. I also want to acknowledge we're going to do introduction a little bit later, but the Anchors are here with us down here in front. They are friends and guests, and these are people that have given their lives to love refugees in our city. And they're going to be talking with us in a few minutes, and so I just want to welcome you. Will you welcome them to our service today? We're thankful that you're here. We're going to get to hear from them in just a few minutes, but I'm going to pray, we're going to sing, and we're going to celebrate Jesus. Lord, we love you today. Thank you for the good grace of your son, Jesus, and what he's done, and remind us again today that gods who are not Christ cannot save, but you do. And you are with us and you are for us. So help us run to you this morning. Thank you, Lord. In your name I pray. Amen.